Welcome to the Kim Alpha Podcast. I am Jared Kimber, and with me is, well, I was going to introduce him, but instead of that, we've got a podcast from some of my other podcast hosts who have some things to say about him. So let's just play that and see what happens.
Oh, God.
All right, so this one, a friend of the podcast, Robin Uthappa versus Mike Hussey.
Oh, wow. This is just so sad. Thus far. And look at Jared throw objectivity out the window.
I just want to say that if we were doing this, I would not throw Estelle or Warren or Bayram under the bus either, right? Like, podcasters got to stick together. You can't just do that. Also, Mike Hussey, he was a bit boring. I think Robbie was the more fun player.
Look, I love
Robin. He was at
Robin
the start, then he got a bit boring as well. His 2010 season, we were talking about this. He has a plus true average of 8 and a true strike record of 43.
Oh, wow. I mean,
that's ridiculous numbers.
That
right?
is insane,
I can't believe you guys voted him out.
Indeed. And you'll never see another episode of Kim Up ever again.
I probably would have picked up or saved Robbie Uthappa versus Hodge. So this is all on Varun, guys. And Robbie, if you're watching this, you know, Estelle and I are good people. Not Varun, though. This guy.
I mean, the next episode might be the last one because of you two anyway now, so it doesn't matter.
That the last episode might have been the last one.
Look, we at least kind of made our peace with Robin, saying that, you know, we try to be objective. Varun over here doubled down, so he's really crossed the line, right?
Indeed. Robin should be happy. I didn't put him against AB de Villiers or Chris Gill for stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is it. This is the big question. Do you think you are a better IPL player than Mike Hussey?
Do I think? Yeah, I think any player will always think that. I think, you know, Huss was one of the greatest, I think, who ever played the game. I think especially at the age that he did, the mentality that he actually brought to the game, the hunger that he displayed. And Huss is a very dear friend. And I think he edges me over. And I really believe the hunger he had. And I think I was a better player of spin than he was. But... I reckon I would have taken the spinners down, but a lot more than he did. But I think fast bowlers, I think overall as a batter, I think he would be better than me for sure.
It's Varun who is the one who stuck the boot in and put you up against that type bracket. Because Varun could have just changed it and given you someone that you could beat to get you through to the next round. Because you went out in the first round. That's how harsh this was. You went up against.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Round.
You guys don't muck around, do you all?
But Varun was looking at the numbers.
All of these guys, I meet all of these guys, and they've got like, you know, poker faces when I meet them before the show begins. No one smiles. They're like, hi. I need to earn their respect or something. So I'm like,
exactly.
Okay, I'll do the odds then, if that's what it takes to fit into the Kim Appa team.
and if Mike Hussey came on, it'd be nothing but cheers. But weirdly enough, Varun actually about a day later, he found a really good stat for you that actually would put it back in your favor, which is that you have, I think it's the second or the third most positive years in terms of impact. So impact is a combination of average and strike rate in the history of the IPL, because you're about 110 years old. So part of it is just because you're old. But because you played so many years, you actually had a lot of really plus years. So Varun is like sending me stats saying how good Robbie is. And I was like, you were the one who put the foot into him on the podcast.
But thanks, Jared, for belittling my talent and the fact that
I was on your side. I voted for you. I was the only one who voted for you.
You just called me 110 years old. I know I'm sounding like it right now, but look at what I'm doing. I'm actually doing. Look at what I'm doing to actually be here on this pod. I'm in the middle of influenza and I'm here rocking it out with you.
But you're an athlete. You've got that winner's mentality. You're in Dubai.
This funny thing, right? Today morning, I sent him a message and I'll tell you exactly what I sent him. It was very funny. I'm gonna play it, right? Where the hell is Kimbo? Yeah, there he is. So this is what I said.
Hey, Chair, how are you doing, brother? Hope you're doing well. I'm actually down with a proper cold and cough and could be influenza, what we've been told. Because it started with our daughter and then came to my wife and then me and then practically everyone in the house except our son has it right now. What do you think? Should we just do the episode today with me being like this? I'm happy to do it if it takes. Let me know, bro.
And his response to this was, really up to you. You sound good enough to broadcast. but it's how you feel really. We can always do a shorter episode too. So I said to him,
all right, let's go in 25 minutes.
It's funny because now you play it, you do sound a lot sicker than I remember when I first listened to it. When I first listened to it, I thought it sounds fine.
I'll tell you what that is though. I'll tell you that is being a father, right? Yeah. That's being a parent. Let's put it that way, right? When you are a parent and you have two or three kids at home, you got to kind of, you know, rug it out, don't you? And you just like, yeah, it's par for the course. You go about doing your day. Right now, I finished the pod and I have to go pick my son up from school because Sheets is not up to it, you know, and it'll be fun. But I'm saying it's what we need to do. So he was like, what the hell can a podcast do? You come and talk, man. So I was like, okay.
I mean, basically, my thought was if you could sit upright, you could do a podcast. If you can't sit upright, I didn't realize though at that stage you were going to come onto the podcast rugged up like you were walking through the Siberian wilderness. Like if you'd sent me a photo, if that was a video message, I might have said, dude, just stay in bed. But we're here now. So and a minute ago, I made a joke about you being 110 years old. Let's flip this and pretend that you are 14 or 17 or whatever age.
Before we close, sorry for interjecting you, but before we close the whole Michael Hussey part, I think he's one of the greatest batters who've played in the pre-modern era. Like if we're calling this modern, then, you know, or if we're calling this post-modern and Virat Kohli modern, and then I reckon, you know, Huss, one of the greatest batters in that pre-modern era. He is incredible. I mean, you listen to his story, his work ethic. To be very honest, I was taking the mickey out of you when I said, oh, I'm going to put myself up there against spinners. I think he's well and truly a much better batter than I am, yeah.
He's a brilliant player against spin, especially for an Australian, and especially for a Western Australian, where they don't even see spin in Western Australia. I don't know how he ever learnt how to play it. Okay, so Mike Hussey's really old. In fact, he got good when he was really old. You're really old. I'm really old, so that's okay. So this week, we saw two teenagers play, one of which is listed at the age of 14. The other one is listed at the age of 17. One of those players might be slightly older than listed, but he's still quite young. I want to talk to you as a dad for a minute, because I had a real reaction watching Vaibhav come off the field crying and thinking to myself, oh, I don't know. Like, I don't know how comfortable I feel about this. You've put, obviously, talent is not an issue for him. I know the long history of teenage prodigies, especially male teenage prodigies, and what happens to them, especially in sport. In fact, I went through the list the other day of the guys who've made over 1,000 runs at international cricket before turning 20. There's a lot of guys who just didn't make it and blew up and have problems in their private lives and all these different things. And so I looked at it from a dad of just like, I don't know how comfortable I feel about that. As a batter, I have no issues with him. Obviously, he's got incredible hand-eye coordination. You know, he was picking the ball up so early. That first shot is ridiculous. But as a dad, and that's why I'm asking you, as a dad, how did you feel about the whole situation? Because you know how much pressure is now on him from here on in.
Well, pressure is going to be a part of it. And I think at every point, he's turned up trumps against pressure, you know. And I think, I'll tell you something about, I don't know how much I can say this though, but you know, something about Indian homes, right? And I've kind of been through it myself, and oftentimes, for me, even when I was growing up, cricket was an escape, also, from the things that were going on at home, right? But in his case, it doesn't seem to be the case. You know, his dad and mom has been supporting him, you know, from the word go. From whatever little bit I know that his mom and dad have been supporting him a lot, and his dad, in fact, has been working very hard with him, and you know, with a lot of the controversies surrounding his age. And for me, you know, if he's 14 or if he's 16 or if he's 17, exactly, to bat the way he did, it doesn't matter. Let's just celebrate the talent, the phenomenal talent that the kid is, right? Can you imagine what we were doing when you were 15, 16, 17, 14 even? If he actually is 14 or if he's actually 17, how does it matter? But at 17, what were we doing when we were 17? How much of our lives have we had sorted out, you know, at 17? Instead of celebrating what we see in front of us, we're talking about things that at this point doesn't really matter because he's already there. You know, it was a point of contention when he was playing the under-19s and you know, he didn't do well. He did really well and then he was taking somebody else's position, or he was playing under-15 and taking somebody else's position. Then it's a point of contention. Here, I don't think it should be. And as a father, I think we don't know the whole story yet, but one can only hope that, you know, it's a fairy tale, and you know, he goes on to do some special things. And if there's anywhere we can find another Sachin Tendulkar, I would have to say it would be from India and nowhere else.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. I can get that. Well, one, every Sachin Tendulkar, my worry is that there's a lot of guys who come broken, and you know, especially in their 20s when it gets really tough in your early 20s, it's the most important thing I want fans to know is that being good at 14, 15, 16, 17, because we saw Matra as well play really well with his old man mustache in the other game. We have to understand that there are lots of guys who've started early who don't make it. Like, you can be ready at 16 or 17 to play top level cricket and then be found out by the time you're 23 or 24. You know, there is a real issue with that, right? Like, you know, so I just don't want it to. Do you remember Matt Renshaw? Like, there was so much hype about Matt Renshaw when he played for Australia, and he spent the next 3 or 4 years just not being back in the side. That there are players who are incredibly talented as teenagers who don't make it. And there's a story of Yorkshire. I think the youngest cricketer Yorkshire ever picked was the 15-year-old wicketkeeper, who by the time I think he was 20 or 21, mate, he was managing a Tiger nightclub in Leeds, right? Probably not Leeds. I don't think they have a Tiger in Leeds, but somewhere bad, right? Like a Tiger, you probably strolled into a Tiger nightclub once or twice when you've been in the UK. Interesting nightclubs is what I would say. But the point being is at 15, he was good enough to play for Yorkshire and he didn't develop. We just have to put all that in our minds. And it's hard because you see a kid come out, and as you said, it doesn't matter what his real age is. When you see a kid pick the ball up that early and smash the ball over cover for six, it does something to your head. But we have to understand there is a human being beneath that, and sort of not temper, but just understand that he's going through all this at a young age as well. And we know that someone like Jaiswal is obviously has like a warrior mentality. This guy might have a completely different one, right? And it might just be that they play very good, and there's plenty of players who've come through and been very good. It takes a lot to be, I suppose this is what you would know the most about. I think it takes a lot to be a great professional athlete, which is different from being a great player. Right? A great professional athlete takes a lot, and he's going to learn that in the same way that Macaulay Culkin has learned it and Justin Bieber has learned it, which is with all the spotlight on them, it's a very different kind of world.
If you need your pitch change, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
You know, I think with Yashasvi, I think he's kind of cut from a different cloth. He's an absolute cricket nerd. The hunger is relentless, right? And he wants success, and he wants to be a successful cricketer. He wants to play for India for a really long time. And when you see him, when you watch, look at his eyes, you can see that hunger there all the time. There's an intensity about Yashasvi which is incredible. My only concern for someone like Yash is that he's going at 100 miles an hour 24 hours a day. You know, there needs to be a switch off, right? And I hope he finds a switch off. If he does find it, it'll do a world of good to his cricket. And I hope he finds a place to be vulnerable and feel safe enough to be vulnerable and express what he feels, and so that he can reinvigorate himself and go back to chasing what he is chasing and pursuing what he is pursuing as far as excellence is concerned as an athlete. With Vaibhav, on the other hand, we saw a 14-year-old kid. We saw a young kid, right? We saw an adolescent kid. Whether you call him 14 or 16, I don't really care, right? We saw an adolescent kid going through the emotions of, in his eyes, perhaps missing out on a big score and taking his victory, right? For me, if I perceive it from that perspective, I think it's a phenomenal, you know, it's a phenomenal thing that he set really high standards for himself. But as long as he has a safe space again to talk about, you know, what he experienced while walking back and what were those emotions, and he can talk about it, then that can be addressed, right? I actually watched him bat against Jofra Archer at the Nets 2 days before the game, right? And he went, I think, one-on-one up against Jofra, and Jofra was letting it rip, Kimo. he was letting it rip. Bouncers, snorters, yorkers. Mm. And this kid was taking him on. And when I say taking him on, I mean taking him on. He was not late on the ball. He was hitting him for boundaries. He was uppercutting him. Out of maybe 12 balls that I saw, he probably didn't connect all, like he probably didn't connect four or five. But 70% of the balls, he actually connected, right? And you could see Jofra's body language as well. This guy, interesting. You know, and Jofra wasn't holding back. So when you see the talent that is there, and when you see that reaction, yes, we can jump into a conclusion. But I'm just right now going to peg it to, hey, I think it's hunger. I think it's him wanting to do well for his team, because his team is not doing great at the moment. And if you want to be noticed in Indian cricket, then you have to do something special. Starting off with a 6, yes, is special enough, but sustaining that becomes even more special. Now, right now, he's a little fish among the sharks in the vast ocean that is BCCI cricket, that is Indian cricket, right? Now, he will have to go back to first-class cricket. He's not going to play for India right now. He's going to go back to first-class cricket. He's going to have to score his runs. He's going to have to navigate through how the seniors treat him there. Are they treating him well enough? Are they nurturing his talent, or are they belittling his talent because of the insecurity they face and harming that talent? Now, what I would do if I were BCCI, have someone actually, someone that is perhaps from, you know, recommended by the BCCI to coach the Bihar side that he plays for, to actually try and build a good side, but at the same time take care of this talent that is Vaibhav Suryavanshi. I would actually do that, because that talent is special, it's rare, and it needs to be valued.
Also, I was with St. Lucia when we had KS Ahmed, and I think it was his first franchise gig. And he turned up at Trinidad Airport and didn't speak English and didn't know how to get through customs. And it was only that I looked back in the line and was like, that looks like KS Ahmed. And I went up and I ended up getting him through immigration, right? Mm. And it struck me the welfare again? Of the younger players.
Sorry, who was this again?
KS Ahmed, you know, the leg spinner from Afghanistan, their backup leg spinner.
Yeah.
He's the one who bowls occasional bounces, I think. That's his big gimmick. Lovely kid, really good bowler. Mm. And I remember thinking at the time, I think cricket has a bit of a problem with the younger players in that we're not set up from a welfare point of view. How you deal with a younger player is different than everywhere else. And we need to think about a little bit more about the general life welfare of the player. And I've seen this in a few different cricket cultures now. You know, I've seen it in county cricket happen a few times before. I've seen it everywhere else. And if you fit in and you're a younger player, it usually doesn't matter as much. But it's the kids who, as you said before, some of those kids are just absolutely obsessives, right? And they'll do whatever they're asked to do. And it may not always be the exact right thing. We just have to make sure in cricket that we have that. You know, we have had cases of exploiting younger players and worse stories that have come out. We just have to make sure that when we have a player like this, there is a system built up. And I think that's probably something that we're missing. But very exciting. Both of the young players this weekend, or whenever they both played, I was really excited to see them. So good luck to both of them. And we hope that they have very good full professional careers, and people look out for them and not just treat them as a potential money cow and all the bad stuff that happens in professional sport.
Before we close that, you know, I have an idea, man. You know, one of the things that I've always believed that cricketers need, especially young cricketers, is a finishing school of sorts. You know, a school where they're taught about media interactions, they're taught about understanding contracts, they're taught about, you know, table etiquette and stuff like that, right? So that they can present themselves really well. I know it's a 5%er, but I think that's something that adds tremendous value to you. Laundry. Right.
Shoaib Malik said that when he played for Hobart Hurricanes, he'd never done laundry before. And he's suddenly in Hobart and he has to learn how to use a washing machine. And then he says, oh, this is easy. I could have done this years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And saved a lot of money as well.
Yeah. No, you said you're right. So, and little things too, like of how you spend your money, how you spend your per diem when you're traveling, right? Like all the little tiny things you don't understand.
Yeah. And even about negotiating good deals for yourself, right? Because you have to understand that our careers or our careers as athletes have a very short and condensed time span, right? An exceptional career, a rare one, is a 20-year career. whilst a normal corporate career is a 40-year career, yeah. Right? So people cribbing about, oh, cricketers making a lot of money is as in if you have to kind of justify that, it's just because we make a lot more money in a shorter period of time. That is our timeline in this sport. And if we have to do a lot of things right, like you have to do a lot of things right in the corporate world, and things have to go your way. And if you're exceptionally lucky, then you will have, like, the average IPL career is a 3 to 5 year career.
Yeah.
The average, I reckon, a good IPL career is an 8 year career, 5 to 8 year career. A rare one is a 10 to 12 year. An exceptionally rare one is a 15 year career. And Stuff of Dreams are a 20-year career, which guys like Virat Kohli, Sachin Tendulkar, MS Dhoni, a lot of them are actually exercising right now. Been in the industry for over 20 years and going as far as they can. Like if you look at, say, Rahul Dravid, started in 1996, finished into 2011, right? And we reckon he's one of the greatest batters that came out of India. He had a 16-year career, and that is small, right? And so if we actually work with these kids from a young age and get them well-rounded, what tends to happen is after they do finish, or when they get to the back end of their career, what happens is instead of going through a steep fall of significance, relevance, and financial ability to earn financially at the same levels, then you can set yourself up at the back end, and you can start like the Dinesh Karthiks of the world, and I did, right? We started getting into broadcasting, started talking about stuff, and I've gotten into life coaching right now and performance coaching right now. So you can navigate through that, and all they need to do is actually focus on that. Say a great example is a Mohit Sharma. Mohit Sharma recognized that cricket's not going to be a big part of his life for forever. It's going to be a 15-year career, if that. And he had a few years out of the IPL. So what he started doing, he started educating himself about different businesses that interest him. And today is in certain businesses whilst not playing cricket. So he's still playing cricket, but also pursuing something else. And I think a finishing school for the guys, for a guy like Yashasvi Jaiswal, for youngsters, like even for guys who are under 30, just to educate them that, hey, there is life after cricket. And that's just your youth, right? When I say youth, I'm not saying anyone above 40 isn't young, but your youth is about till you're about 40. And then after that, the body changes even more. We've seen it change. I've seen it change from 30 to 32. The drastic shift in the way my body recovers was like a huge scale down. And I was like, oh shit, my practice shouldn't be based on how much reps I get right now. My practice should be based on how well I recover, right? And that's what the focus should be. Like, I'll give you an example of a young guy who must be 34, 35, still playing the IPL, a very good bowler. Suddenly found himself out of the Indian team, early 2020s, not needed anywhere. He was unceremoniously said, okay, not good enough, not going to use him anymore, dropped, right? And he was missing for 9 months. And he had perhaps an IPL contract. I don't remember the exact numbers. He might probably had a 10 crore IPL contract. That contract came down to about 5 crores. And now today, he's a husband, he's a father. There's a certain quality of life that he's living. And suddenly, he's not in the news anymore. He's insignificant to Indian cricket. And there's a huge drop in the sense of significance and relevance that he has in the ecosystem. And suddenly, he must have been feeling, oh shit, what do I do with my life right now? Because cricket is all that he's got, right? And cricket is who he is. He's a sweetheart, an absolute sweetheart of a human being. And I worried about him. You want to be able to take care of guys like that. You want to be able to empower guys to be able to say, okay, you know what? If you're gonna let him out, you're gonna let him go, and hold him a little bit for 6 months. Because you get primed for mental health stuff when stuff like that happens to you. Because you're searching for significance. You're not going to get it in your own home, because you're going to be treated like who you actually really are and not the narrative you set as a cricketer, right? And your relevance in the ecosystem is like you're downgraded, so to speak, for a player of his caliber, downgraded to first class cricket and local T20 leagues that happen within the state and the IPL when it does happen. I've been through that. Right. And since 2018, 2019, I've been through that. And it took a lot for me to keep myself, you know, and keep the semblance of my mind in an active and happy state. Because I remember in 2022, after the IPL, I was literally vegetating at home. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I need to do something, right? And I was like, what is this life? As in, how do I navigate through this? And is this who I want to be for my son? Is this who I want to be for my daughter who's going to be born? Is this who I want to be to my wife? As in, is this how I want to live? And I actually thought I'll do really well because I helped CSK win the IPL. So I thought in the auctions, I should get at least 4 or 5 crores is what I thought I'd make. Mm-hmm. I went for 2, right? And suddenly I'm making these grandiose plans. And then suddenly you get thrown down the barrel and you get 2 crores. And it's what it is, right? And then suddenly you have to plan for everything with everything that exists in your life, right? And all the issues that exist in your life, you know, and taking care and you having a child come through. And then so you're wondering, okay, how are you going to do this? And then suddenly you're like, okay, I need to start broadcasting. I need to get to a better headspace. Literally, I went down to the logistics of it. Like, how many matches am I playing in a year? I was like, if I play all of domestic cricket, I'm playing 25 matches in a year. At best, 27 matches in a year. And then if I give myself the chance to go abroad and do broadcasting on the side, I'll give myself the chance to play about 50, 60, 70 matches. I thought 100 when I started, but I thought at least 50, 60. And today I'm getting to play about 45, 50 matches in a year, which is great, right? I'm playing 4 or 5 leagues, which is great. There's a sense of relevance because you're playing Legends cricket and you're playing this and you're playing that, but you're still pursuing something that you absolutely love. And I still wanted to play cricket. The fire still burns to play cricket at the highest level, right? And win tournaments, win championships. And I genuinely believe when I exited from Indian cricket, I'll get opportunities. And then the first opportunity came along and then they pulled the plug on a 3-year deal with me, 6 months into the first one. And I was like, again, and we'd moved to Dubai by then. I was like, oh shit, what am I going to do? And then it was 1.5 years of soul searching. And so for me, because of all of these things for me, I've been through it. And I was like, imagine you handhold kids from a young age and teach them about investments, teach them about, you know, just basic stuff, right? Reading a contract, negotiating a good deal and understanding what is good for you. Laundry, like the most basic stuff, right? That anybody needs, because it's so intense in international cricket that you barely have any time. You blink and then like a year's gone by.
From Virat Kohli's MCG 6 against Pakistan to Bumrah's stump-destroying Yorker to Ollie Pope, incredible things happen on the cricket ground. We also get iconic lines off it, like Siraj saying, "I only believe in Jesse Bhai." There are so many incredible moments that cricket fans just never forget. And now you can wear them on your chest. Free Heat Gear has launched a line of amazing t-shirts and hoodie designs. Passionate fans in India can order through their website, freeheatgear.com, while fans abroad can use Free Heat Gear on the Etsy store to have items delivered to them. Order now with the code GOODAREAS, or one word, to get a limited time 15% discount, and you can wear a t-shirt like this one right here. No, it's such a... I don't think people really understand just how weird it is, because you look at the NBA players who make a lot more than cricketers, and something like 80% of them are bankrupt within 5 years of leaving the NBA, because they get their money between the age of 22 and 32 when they're not mature enough to handle being a multimillionaire, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the general millionaires in the world have either learned how to make their money so they can continually make it for the rest of their life, or they've made it when they're 30, 40, 50, right? And they have a good system around them. Like, and you're right. Like, I've been out with cricketers who are late 20s, early 30s, who have a really weird diet because they never matured enough and everyone just kept giving them the food that they wanted. So, you know, they were tour Sri Lanka and they would be given, you know, the whole Shane Warne thing of like traveling with baked beans and all that sort of stuff, right? That's just because he wasn't said, well, how about this, Shane? How about we sit you down and show you all the different foods from around the world and see what you like? Because there's going to be a meal in India, in Pakistan, in Sri Lanka that you're going to like. You just haven't tried it yet. It's tiny little things like that that we haven't got to. And it's such a fractured sport, right? Like, you know that you're going to have to understand all these different cultures as you go in, and you're going to have to work through them. And we're just not setting them up for the success that they could have at the moment. So it's a fascinating conversation, man. It's great to hear. And look, I would have been an absolute basket case if I was famous at 14, but I would have been an absolute basket case if I was famous at 25, right? Like, I just wouldn't have been ready for that, right? Like, people say to me, oh, you've got, you know, a few subscribers now. And I'm like, yeah, but if they had all come early in my career, I probably would have become an absolute monster. Like, I would have gone off the deep end, right?
I can tell you.
I've been lucky that it's been drip fed.
Yeah, I can tell you. As I'll be the first one to put my hand up. I won my first World Cup at 21. I made my first $1 million at 22, 23. I was a basket case. I had no idea how to deal with fame. I had no idea how to deal with money. And I lost the plot for a good fair bit. And it's taken me a lot of mistakes to learn. And I genuinely would not like to have youngsters go through what I've been through. And this is actually roots from there. The fact that I've been through it and I don't want others to go through it and even negotiate good deals. Like today, I really appreciate Shreyas Iyer, you know, who stood up for what he felt his worth, he was worth, and tried to negotiate a good deal with KKR. That didn't work out. And then he left. And then, you know, he believed he was worth a lot more. And he actually got that.
All right, let's move on. I want to ask you, this is such a different question, but saliva. I want to talk to you about saliva. I've always wanted to talk to you about saliva. Since the first time I saw you play, make those runs against England, I've always thought one day me and Robbie will just be sitting around talking about spit. there's three different cricket balls that we use. I mean, there's more than that if you count the SG and the Dukes as well, but there's three kind of different cricket balls. Saliva and sweat are very important for the red ball because the red ball is all leather and you want to smooth over the leather so you can keep it smooth on one side. The white ball is leather, but it's leather undercasing and it's a very different kind of ball. It's actually paint on top of the ball, which is why it acts. It's why it's such a terrible ball. We shouldn't use it, but that's a different conversation for another day.
Why did they stop making white leather balls? I don't know. It's so stupid. Well, it's like...
They're still white leather. The problem is that they have tried to fix it and they haven't actually made it any better. Does that make sense? So they haven't made it worse because if you go back to before you played, the old balls, like I remember in 2003 watching guys in the Nets bowl a ball four times and it'd dribble to you and you pick it up and go, what is this? We wouldn't use this at a club game, right? But you're right. I still don't understand why pink balls haven't been invested in a little bit more. But the question is, saliva doesn't help a new ball swing in white ball cricket. It does in red ball cricket. And the reason it does it in white ball cricket is because you need the paint on the ball to make it swing in white ball cricket. Do you believe in saliva at the death? Because there was this hilarious incident last week where everyone said, oh, the ball's reverse swinging more for Mitchell Starc because of saliva. And he's like, no, I don't use saliva at all. So I wonder how much of this is mental with the cricketers because they've grown up thinking that saliva is a really important thing. So they're trying to do it more. Or how much saliva is better than normal sweat when it comes to smoothing out the ball?
So with the new ball, it makes a little bit of a difference with the red ball because, like I'm telling you, yours truly was one of those guys who took the ownership when the bowlers were bowling with red ball cricket for in Ranji Trophy. He said, we'll shine it. We'll keep the ball as good as possible so that our fast bowlers can get the wickets. And we had a team of like incredible fast bowlers on our side. So we try to keep the ball as new as possible. So saliva did help. Outside of that, with the old ball, especially with the white ball, saliva... helps to the extent of making the ball heavy, right? What helps in the back end of a white ball innings is that if one side of the ball can be heavy, whether it's sweat, whether it's saliva, that doesn't really matter. If you can get one side of the ball heavy, then you can get the ball to reverse and tail back in, depends on how your action is. And I think reverse swing is also dependent on how good your action is for reverse swing. You got to have like not a straight arm. Like say, for example, Venkatesh Prasad, because of the way he brought his arm here wasn't the best.
I think that's really interesting. So I thought, so what you're talking about is loading, right? Mm. And so there's two kinds of reverse swing. I don't want to get too sciencey with you, but there's two kinds of reverse swing. There's one.
The people listening to the pod actually enjoy the sciencey parts of it. So I reckon they enjoy it. So go for it.
So generally what happens is you have one side of the ball is smoother and one side is rougher, right? And that's how you get conventional swing. But at a certain point, one side of the ball actually gets lighter than the other side of the ball. Mm. And it's generally with a red cricket ball that the rough side gets lighter and that the other side gets a little bit heavy. And then the aerodynamics flip on the ball and they go in the other direction. But there's two different ways of getting reverse swing. And that's what I'm interested in. And that's what I'm interested in what you just said. In a red ball game, you generally want the ball to be dry to get it to reverse swing. And you get one side really, really dry and you get the other side so it's smoother and that reverses. But in a white ball game, what you're telling me in T20 cricket is that conventional, the old style of reverse swing, which is called loading, which is literally just licking the ball until it gets heavy on one side. That still happens in T20 cricket and one day cricket. That's what you're telling me. And that is what saliva helps with.
Yeah, and that's what Afridi was doing. You know, when we saw him biting the ball, he wasn't actually biting. He was actually licking
it. He was hungry.
No, but yeah, you're absolutely right. I think he was basically, and I think it's basically getting the ball heavy on one side so that the ball can tail back in whichever side is heavier. You aim that towards the batter. So if you want to bowl an in-swing in Yorker, and with the white ball, you can't see it anymore. You know, with the red ball, there's at least a chance to see. If you know as a batter the ball's reversing, then you can pick it up and you can actually tell. And there have been a lot of instances when we are batting in first-class cricket where the non-striker will look at the ball as he's running in, and then we'll hold the bat. And we pick that up. We pick that up from Sachin Tendulkar, by the way. So if he holds it in the right hand, you say the ball's coming in. Hold the bat left hand, and the ball's going away. So that would happen. And a lot of guys would like that information. A lot of them wouldn't like it. I was someone who didn't like it. And I was like, I just want to watch the ball. Wherever the ball is, I'll try.
So do you know why it affected some people and it didn't affect others? It's about, so essentially, when you are facing a ball, the difference between you and me, other than that you're a great athlete and can play cricket, but the difference between you and me is I can pick up lots of things of a bowler, right? But I can't process them in my brain to be like, oh, he's coming wider on the wrist now. He's cocked his wrist here. He's going to be able to do this. And even the little bits that I can pick up, I then don't have the ability to move my eyes from the first 3 meters of the ball to the last 3 meters of the ball the way that you do once it's over 75 miles an hour, right? So your brain is doing all that subconsciously. When a batter is saying to you, oh, I'm going to hold my bat in this side or this side, your subconscious brain starts to stop, right? So you actually get to a point where you're now thinking consciously. Now, if you're Kumar Sangakkara or Sachin Tendulkar or Steve Smith, you can actually flip between conscious brains and subconscious brains really, really easily. And that's why they're at the very top of the tree of batting skill. Most people like you can do one or the other. Yeah. They can either be completely conscious or completely subconscious. So when you're trying to do that sort of stuff, it's just changing all of your processes, right? And that's why reverse swing works so well. Because what reverse swing does is you have to reprogram your brain to be like, okay, the next ball, it's going to look like it's going to swing away, but it's going to swing in, which is a conscious thing. So the Martin Crowe, have you ever heard the Martin Crowe story about how Martin Crowe was basically the first guy to work out reverse swing? And Martin Crowe, what he did is really simple. And if I tell a normal non-cricketer this, they'll be like, oh, well, that's easy. Everyone should do that. But what Martin Crowe did was he just went, okay, all I have to do is play for in-swing every ball. If I just train my brain to play for in-swing every ball, if Wasim or Wacker swing it away, it'll miss off stump, right? But he's retrained himself to play in swing every single ball. And suddenly, from that point forward, people got a lot better against reverse swing. But the reason that's hard is because Martin Crowe is a genius, right? He's a fucking genius. And so he could do that. Whereas for someone like you, you're like, I know I have to do this. But and then your rhythm goes, your timing goes. And so now it's not even that the reverse swing is beating you, but you're just not playing subconsciously the way that you normally do. And it's the same as, like, Yuvraj Singh has a great record of runouts, right? Yuvraj Singh was a really good one-touch fielder and he had a good arm, but he's not the world's greatest athlete. He wasn't covering 30 meters in the field, right? Alan Border, another guy, not covering 30 meters in the field. But the reason those two get so many runouts is because as a left-hander, when you're a batter and you hit the ball into the gap, what's a natural gap for you is the left hand of a fielder, right? So you take off. By the time you've realized that guy is left-handed, you're already in a little bit of trouble and you might get back. But if you look at the fielders with the best run out percentage in the world, they're almost always left-handers. There's heaps of them at the top, you know, Michael Clarke, Jadeja, Border, Yuvraj. They're all up at the top of that list. And so that's what your brain is doing, because you are making so many micro decisions that you don't even know about as a human being in that moment. And so reverse swing just tilts your brain a little bit. So here's my question. Do you think that saliva helps reverse swing?
Yeah, with the white ball?
More than sweat.
Saliva. So after a point, I think it does. I don't think it matters if it's saliva or sweat, to be honest. I think it's about getting one side of the ball heavy. That's the simplest way. Like anyone, like if someone doesn't know and is basically a box and you want to teach them how to, it's basically a block and you want to teach them how to reverse swing the ball, just say, okay, listen, this side, make this really heavy and just try and bowl the ball out. The ball will go away.
Perfect. You know? All right. That's good. I'm actually talking to Aaron Briggs from the ECB. Aaron Briggs is the guy who split a cricket ball in half and does science on cricket balls. So let's see if he agrees with you. I think he will. I originally was a little bit doubtful with the white ball and saliva. Red ball and saliva, I'm fully invested in. All right. I wanted to talk to you about, you mentioned it before, Wheatley. I want to talk to you about Mohit Sharma. And I want to talk to you from a perspective of what it's like to be a professional athlete who knows that there's something not quite working in their technique, but they have to make it through the next year to try and get another contract and everything else. So Mohit Sharma, and you would know the kind of bowler I'm talking about here. I meant Mohit. Mohit Sharma is the kind of bowler who, when he's getting revolutions on the ball, is very close to unplayable. The amount of revolutions he gets, and you talk to players who faced him and they say, it feels like the ball's coming at your eyes and then suddenly it drops at your feet and you don't know how to play it because to talk about what we were talking about before, it ruins all your triggers, right?
Yeah.
But when he's not giving revolutions on the ball like that, he doesn't have that special advantage. So this year, we've seen Mohit Sharma go towards bounces and we've seen it go wrong a couple of times. It's really hard when the thing that you're good at isn't quite working for you and in the middle of an IPL, you have to change it, nudge it, come up with a new theory, come up with something else. And obviously he's a clever cricketer and he spent a lot of time thinking about what to do. But this is the really tricky bit of being a professional, right? Right now, when the thing that you're really good at isn't working the way that you need it to.
So I think Mohit and Harshal Patel are very similar bowlers. Both also come from the same state. There was, if you can remember, a couple of years ago, I can't remember if it's 22 or if it's 23, where Harshal came back from his injury. When he was playing for India, and then he came back from that injury. And, you know, he was trying to get in that World Cup side, I think. And I don't know if he eventually got in, I can't remember. But you could tell that his slower balls that had the revs on it wasn't dipping, right? And why wasn't it dipping was simply because he wasn't completing his action. And the inhibition he felt as coming back from the injury wasn't allowing him to complete his action. So there are various reasons sometimes a particular delivery that is your stock delivery doesn't work. And especially if you've come back from any sort of a niggle or an injury, there's a part of you subconsciously, not consciously, subconsciously that protects yourself from injuring that part again. So it takes a lot of work, a lot of reps for the mind and the subconscious mind to let go of the protection of that one particular part of the body, especially as a fast bowler, because it is, first of all, the hardest skill to execute in cricket. And so your variations to get that absolutely right sometimes doesn't happen. And a lot of times what isn't explained in broadcasting is why something isn't working. You know, people know that he's coming back from an injury, but I think sometimes as a broadcaster, if you can educate the people to say that, okay, you know, he's coming back from an injury, perhaps this is one of the reasons. The first thing that happens is like Mohit Sharma probably had a niggle, right? And he's figured out that based on where my body is, these are my go-to deliveries for this season. I'm going to try and have to do my best that I can possibly do in this season, then come back feeling and detraining my subconscious mind, retraining it with what I need to do. There's a lot of effort that goes into that. There are a lot of reps. He's not a spring chicken. He's 34, 35, maybe a little older. So how does he navigate through that? And so it should be all about recovery, but how can he detrain the subconscious mind whilst focusing on recovery in every session? That's finding yourself between a rock and a hard place. And this is where I feel like there needs to be a little bit more empathy in cricket and, you know, just need to explain these things to the masses so that they understand.
The empathy is interesting, but also I think what people don't understand is there's a kind of normal slow ball where someone just comes in with their fingers on the ball and runs it around the side, right? like you and I could do that. Right. Like that's not what we're talking about. When Dwayne Bravo puts revolutions on the ball, he's basically putting similar revolutions on the ball to someone like Ashwin. They are moving their entire hands.
He gets his wrist to go like that at the point of delivery and gets his wrist to go from like almost 180 degrees on the ball at pace through his arm action. Right. That is not easy.
No. And so you've got your shoulder, you've got your elbow and you've got your wrist and sometimes your fingers, but that's less. There are some slower ball bowlers who have problems with their fingers. But you have a look at Bob Appleyard and Mustafizur Rahman are the guys who bowl at full pace bowling cutters, right? They've both had shoulder and elbow issues before. And we see it right across cricket with this sort of issue that comes in. You only need it to be slightly off. And as you said, you might not trust your body, but it also might be that your body just doesn't rotate at the same speed that it used to, and you can't go through and everything else. And so I think we have to start thinking about those, because I've seen years when Dwayne Bravo's been crap. where he just hasn't got the drop on his slower ball, right? Yeah. And if you look at his numbers, he's not like a consistent threat like Malinga and Bumrah are, right? Yeah. He had years where he was incredible and years where he really, really struggled. We have to understand that the slower ball bowlers, there's a different impact that is going through their body. Yeah, and it is really, and so I actually think slower ball bowlers are probably the closest to baseball pitchers that we have in the game. We think of the fast bowlers like baseball pitchers, but it's probably the slower ball bowlers because of the way that, you know, you end up with the shoulder and the elbow issues all the way through that. So I just think it's really fascinating because he's obviously a really clever cricketer and he's just trying to work it out. And sometimes you can't. All right. I think you're going to die. So before you die.
But do you reckon the likes of like a Mohit Sharma, the likes of a Harshal Patel, when they're going through this stuff, should speak to their respective coaches, bowling coaches, and be vulnerable about what they're navigating through?
If you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months, plus gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a blocker protects the stumps with Nord VPN today.
I think they should do that, but I also think there's a science method of going through this. There's a machine now. I think it's a machine that's out of baseball. It's called the Rapsodo, I think, or Repeat. It's something like that anyway. And it works out the amount of revolutions that you put on the ball really accurately in a way that nothing in cricket can replicate. You should be able to, it's the same as a speed test, right? We want to see if you're fully fit at the moment. Can we have a look? And if you're not doing it, right, then you have the vulnerable conversation of like, no, you're right, I've been hiding this a little bit. It's really important for fans to know this. Professional athletes are the best hiders of things I've ever come across.
Because
every professional athlete has a weakness other than someone like Bumrah or Glenn McGrath. Like every other professional athlete in the world has like a weakness within their game, and they're constantly trying to make sure that that weakness doesn't bring them down and that isn't. And so you're always hiding. You're making sure that people can't hit, bowl to you in this particular way or this kind of delivery, or, you know, you're going up against batters and you don't want them to be able to use their feet against you or whatever that may be, your weakness as a player. And so if you can show them with science, well, you used to have 2,000 revs on the ball and you now have 1,700 revs on the ball, maybe that's what's causing the problem. I've always found as an analyst that they just have to then have an open conversation with you. Whereas if you go to a player as a bowling coach and go, do you think you're getting as many revolutions? They'll be really defensive and go, of course I am. And next game, they'll try harder to get more revolutions and their action isn't ready and it falls apart. But I think it's opening up those conversations, right? And allowing them to feel wanted and trusted and everything else. And it's hard in franchise cricket because they may not know their bowling coach particularly well.
Yeah, right? It's important to be real and to create the kind of space where one can be real with each other. And I think there are nuanced ways of going about this and saying, okay, hey, so listen, last year is what I used to measure you and you were at 2,000 revs a ball with your slow ball. I'd like to check where you are this year, so go for it. You know, and I just want us to have an honest conversation about it. And I want to get you because I want you to be successful because you're really important to us. When you make a person feel secure and you make them feel like they're not fighting for security, then they always feel indebted to you. It is basic human nature. When security is provided, you're thinking about what can I contribute, right? What can I do to make this better? If you're a decent human being, then you're thinking, okay, what can I do, right? But if you don't have security, you're like, oh, survival. I just need to get through this tournament. I need to get from one match to the next, to the next, to the next. And I'm not worried about, you know, what comes out. I just want to perform. Even the team loses, team wins, it does not matter. I need to make sure I need to perform at this level. And you often see that with a lot of teams that provide security versus that don't provide security. And more often than not, the teams that do provide security end up winning a lot. And the teams that don't provide security end up not winning.
No, I think that's a fantastic way of putting it. And I'd say also, like, you're becoming a coach. I've been an analyst for a long time. How you talk to each player is really different because everyone is completely different. And one thing I tried to do with certain teams was I worked out with St. Lucia. I would go direct because I'm a direct guy and I'd be like, this is happening. How can we fix this? And the players would just be like, what are you talking about? Whereas at Scotland, what I would do is I would sit in the hotel lobby or in the bar, wait for them to walk past and they'd come up and chat and they'd be like, what are you working about on? And I'd be like, oh, funny you say that. I found this thing. What do you think of this? right? Yeah. Like, and then you have to work out. There are some players you just have to say to them, this isn't working. What do we need to do? And there are other players where you almost need to let them find it on their own. Do you see anything on the screen at the moment that says anything?
Yeah.
I'm very conscious of the fact that you might pass out and die at any stage from your...
I have a great story about a coach. If you strap for time, I'll tell you a great story as a coach, as someone, as a player. And this is with Venkatesh Prasad. This is in 2008-09, I reckon, after we won the World Cup. And I played my first season of BB 7-8, I reckon. 6-7, right? Before we won the World Cup. And I just got into the Indian team, played 3 matches, scored the highest by an Indian on debut. 2 matches later, had 2 bad games. 2 matches later, dropped, cut from the Indian team. And back at Ranji Trophy cricket. 3 Ranji Trophy games had gone by. And Venkatesh Prasad was the coach. We were playing in Mysore, this great ground that I love. I got a lot of hate in that ground, but I've also got a lot of love in the ground. It's called Gangotri Glades. So at Glades, the first innings against Haryana had gotten over, and I'd scored 50 in that game, in that first innings. And I came back to the room. I was feeling very upbeat about myself that I got a 50. So then Venki called me to his room. So I went to Venki's room, and this is why I love Venki, right? Because that's what helped me understand what I like as a player. I like honesty. I like straightforwardness. So it was a moment of discovery for me as a youngster. And I went to Venki's room and said, Venki said, okay, I'm going to open something up and I want you to search for your name on that list. So he went to ESPN Cricket Info and then went to 2006-2007 seasons. He said, top run scorers in the Ranji Trophy. So I said, search for your name. So I started searching. I went past the first page, name not there. Went past the second page, name not there. Went past the third page. In the middle of it stood number 47, RV Uttappa, right? 150 in 5 innings. And he said, 140 runs or something like that. So he said, do you want to play for India? I said, yeah, I do. He said, you really think if you're the 47th highest run scorer for India, you will play for India? You'll be able to make a comeback? I said, no, I won't. So he said, where do you want to be? I said, Venki, thank you for this. I promise you, by the end of this tournament, I will be the highest run scorer in the Ranji Trophy. And then 5 matches later, I scored 100 in the second innings of the Haryana game. I scored 4 more hundreds and I made a comeback into the Indian team in 2007. And that was a game where I scored 70 or 40 balls or 35 balls against West Indies in Chennai. And for me, that straightforwardness from a coach and just the way he spoke to me. And I even actually left the side by the time we got to the semifinals. I left the side because I had joined the Indian team and then subsequently got picked in the World Cup side, which we lost and all that. But that was my comeback trail, you know. And it was only because a coach was brave enough to sit me down and talk to me man to man and have an honest and direct, straightforward conversation.
No, these things are so important. As you said, honesty in general, and also working out how you need the information given to you. All right, I am conscious of Robbie's general physical health.
His
mental
health
we'll worry about another time. Do we have memes this week? I don't know if we have any memes. Did the team do memes? No, I think... I see something. I'm not sure. I see a slide. Is Rakshit going to bring the slide up? Oh, hello. Look at this. I saw someone animate this. This is the Pakistani disappointed fan from, was it Birmingham or Leeds? I can't remember in the World Cup. But did you see that, like, when on ChatGPT, they learned how to animate stuff? One of the first things that was animated on ChatGPT was this guy into studio. He's so famous, this Pakistani fan. Anyway, it says, fielder stops ball near boundary, Kohli Patekar run 4 runs. That was remarkable, only because when we saw the replay, Kohli isn't even running full tilt. He runs the first 2 as hard as possible, and then he's like, I'll jog back the 3rd, because why would you not? And he still gets a 4th run. It was one of the weirdest bits of the fielding I have seen. In fact, a Vaibhav as well. Do you remember when Vaibhav was dropped and the ball was punched up and then all Ravi Bishnoi had to do was stop it? It was like a comedy moment out near the boundary. We've seen some pretty good ones. All right, what else we got here? Oh, yeah. RCB at home matches, RCB away. I mean, I just don't understand how over this many years, mate, we still haven't had an RCB that really dominates consistently at home. Like, I understand that the pitch is maybe a bit more generic than other places and everything, but you would have thought, dumb luck, they would have worked out how to be better at home over a period of time.
So can I speak about this for like 5 minutes?
Mate, you're the one who's about to pass
out. I gotta say it because I think it needs to be said. I think that that one, there are too many variables in RCB when they actually play at home. One is the wicket. I don't think anyone's been able to figure out what that wicket's going to do on any day. It looks like a flat deck, looks really hard, but suddenly when the first innings begins, it's stopping, it's gripping, and it's doing everything, right? I think that that ground needs a proper relaying of the wicket, and there needs to be 2 years where they play like a bunch of matches, and they need to go back to the red soil that it used to be. I'm telling you, Chinnaswamy Stadium used to be like Wankhede, proper red soil wicket. And the only reason they don't use red soil is because it's inexpensive to use, to maintain black soil wickets. Like, come on, you've got one of the biggest franchises playing out of there. Like, what kind of a like a lame excuse? And it's my home state, right? And I want this for the people of Bangalore. I want RCB to do well at home. I don't want it to, like, as in, for all the support that the fans have shown this franchise over the years, they need to produce more consistent wickets in Bangalore. And I think it's also on for RCB's part, I think the management has been indecisive as to what kind of a wicket they're going to play on and commit to that. Ideally, on a wicket like that, and I've spoken about this before, Jair, on a wicket that's where the ground is small, fast outfield, rocket outfield, you want to prepare turners and you want to have a good spin bowling unit where your home games are not more than 150, 160 games. 170 games are blind match winners. Those kind of, like, you know, those are the kind of venues, pitches you want to prepare and commit to that. Now, how many of their batters are okay to play 7 games on wickets that don't turn? That turn a lot and that are, you know, where they'll have to graft and they'll have to, you know, go through the whole mission of getting in there, getting set, getting one with the wicket and then scoring runs in the back end of the innings, right? Now, how many of them are willing to commit themselves to that cause? Now, that is another question that everyone has to answer, not just one batter, but like your 8 batters need to answer that and then practice for that, right? And I don't think that decision has been made. There are 2 ways of going about it. One is you relay the whole wicket and get it to be, you know, go back to what Chinnaswamy used to be, a proper red soil wicket where it does, where it's good, true wicket like Mumbai. So you bat well, you get runs, you bowl well, you get wickets. Right, you're never really out of the game, and then you can control due to, for the most part, with that whole chemical that's available right now. So you can control, and toss doesn't have to become crucial in that case. So I think there are 2 ways of going about it. RCB needs to commit to one way, and then, you know, work with KSCA to be able to produce that kind of a wicket, or make peace with the players and allow them to go through the discomfort of batting on difficult wickets at home.
Yeah, I think there is a bit more of a disconnect between the board and the IPL franchise there than there is in some other places.
Tell me something. And so,
I know you may not be aware of this, Robbie, but I don't think they're quite. There are some other places where I think the owner will say, "I want this pitch," and gets this pitch. That hasn't always been the case in Bangalore, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and you have a look. If you look traditionally at T20 wickets around the world,
Calcutta also, by the way, from what I hear today. Have you heard?
Oh, hello. I love that you also gave this really serious answer while we had the 2-dog meme on the screen all the way through, which has been fun. All right, another one here. That note has been in the pocket of Abhishek Sharma for 6 games. Glad it finally came out. It was Travis Head. I do always find that funny that I remember I was at, do you remember the Dinesh Ramdan game where he said, "Yeah, Viv, talk nah." Right, which is like the famous one in cricket because it was like one of the first ones we saw. I remember just thinking, had he just had that in his pocket for like 4 months, hoping that he eventually made a run?
I think anyone, anywhere, when they do something like this, it's the intention that goes behind it, right? The intention for Abhishek Sharma was, I really want to score 100 for this franchise. And if I score 100, I'm going to single-handedly win the game. So when I do score 100, I want to show this to them and say this is for them. But the other one about Viv Richards, I think it would have served him better if he didn't focus on the negatives and focused on the positives instead.
Well, also, I just think that if you're going to have a go at a player, I just don't know if Viv Richards is the best target. Like if it said, Darren Ganga, talk nah, I'd be like, okay, fair enough. But good on Dinesh. If you're gonna do something, mate, take on the king, I suppose. All right, we've got a couple of super chats, so we'll finish up with the super chats now. And Path says, which is more true? Shivam Dubey was found out around the time he was picked for the T20 World Cup and isn't good enough to fix it, or is he out of form? We use the wrong language, and I'm not having a go at you, Path, because I know what you're trying to ask here. I think it's really important to know that what happens is there is a general evolution of you as a player, and sometimes the bowlers or the fielding captains are one step ahead of you, and sometimes they're not. You can't do what Shivam Dubey has done without being a very good player, but now everyone has him at the top of their sheet because he is so dangerous. People are spending half an hour discussing Shivam Dubey in a team meeting now, which means that you've now got 12 or 15 people talking about it, whereas before, when he got really good, you probably only had one or two. Are you okay, Robbie? I'm afraid you're going
to vomit. My jaws got really tight, and I just want to open them up because I'm talking quite a bit.
I was like, all the cricket aggregator sites are like, Robbie Utapa vomits while talking about Shivam Dubey.
did you hear a click?
I didn't. I was trying to ignore the whole thing because you looked like a cat about to spit up a fur ball, and I was terrified that you were gonna do that. So I would say that Shivam Dubey is a really good player at doing what he does. Now people are just one step ahead of him at the moment, and it's up to him to work out whether he can overcome that or he just becomes a dangerous player who can occasionally come off.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I think Shivam Dubey is perhaps under the impression that you work on a weakness once and it's done for. And it's addressed. That's not necessarily the case. You need to consistently work on it. You work on your weaknesses strong enough to make it your strength. Ideally, if you can't work it out enough to make it your strength, you move to the next big thing. What is the next big thing? The next big thing in this case with the short ball could be to get a single off the short ball and just change strike, right? Or come up with another shot. This is something that Shivam will have to work out. I think this season, the spinners have also figured out that if we can push him on the back foot, he's ready to slog the one on the front foot, but he's not ready for the one on the back foot. So they've been trying to push him back. I think that's an easier fix, but he needs to work on these two aspects if he wants to play for CSK or for any franchise till he's ready to retire.
I actually think he's also he's the spin hitting version of Chris Lynn or Jake Fraser-McGurk in that the way he plays against spin is he's basically opening up like a baseballer to hit it. So if the ball's in the arc, he's good. But you have a look, you're right, I think they're bowling shorter. They're also bowling more at his hip. It's very hard to free your arms when the ball's at your hip. So it's just little things with him. This is when you find out if he's a top professional and he can work it out and move past it or not. I remember going to a player once who had an issue, and I pointed out that the issue had come back and they lost it, right? They were like, no, no, no. And it's because they had spent 2 years fixing it, then they'd forgotten about it, and then it had come back. As you said, you have to keep working because, these things seep back into your game. Sandeep says, have you seen the hate against Dravid for Rajasthan Royals form? I mean, we saw the hate against Dravid when India didn't win a World Cup, and then they did win a World Cup.
This is not new. I don't think anyone is spared. I don't think anyone is spared from trolling. And so I don't think it's a novelty anymore. I think it's, and especially in India, and the fact that people can be keyboard warriors without showing their face and saying, okay, here I am, talk to me about it. It's easy to do what trolls do.
Yeah. The my favorite one was when during India's last period before they won the World Cup, where everyone was like, he was a defensive batter. So how could he possibly know how to win T20 cricket? It's like, I think Dravid knows a fair bit about the game.
More than anyone who even knew that statement.
Yeah. Shyam says, Robbie, do you agree with Viru's statement about Maxwell? I don't know what this one is. I know those two don't like each other, though. And it's a bit like when Shane Warne and Mitchell Starc kept saying things about each other. At a certain point, you have to understand that there is a personal issue here, and they are occasionally going to use the public to air it out.
And for good reason, to be very honest, he's not the most liked individual in Indian cricket. I don't want to get into it because I don't think it's my place, but he's not the first person to, Viruba is not the first person to make a statement about Maxwell. I think all of us, have equal things to kind of say about Maxi. No one is denying the fact that he's an incredible talent, but come at the IPL, he's always literally like come for vacation. I've heard stories about I don't think I should be the one saying this stuff, so I'm not going to say it. But I've heard some terrible stories, and like the lack or the absence of professionalism has been dire.
That was the big thing about him in Australia too. They said he wasn't professional enough. Like, this isn't an Indian thing when it comes to the IPL, because we know, look, there are definitely things that Maxwell has done for Australia.
Jad, yeah, I think it's beyond professionalism as well, you know, and which is why, which is why like a fair few of us actually have a conversation about this. And we don't understand how, and we can't fathom how a player like him, based simply on potential, like he's pulled the rug over us for 10 years, man. And by us, I mean the Indian Premier League. Like he's pulled the rug over all of the franchises for 10 years, where he's practically played for every franchise and earned more than $1 million almost every year. And hasn't come up to scratch or lived up to his potential. I think outside of the 2014 season, hasn't lived up to his potential, not once.
Sometimes you just need to take the slips out and bowl defensively. And you also need to be careful with your computer's defense as well. If you need a VPN, go Nord. NordVPN.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. So put in some dot balls and turn them into maidens via NordVPN.com/Kimber.
Well, lived up to his potential is maybe a different conversation with him, but he had a couple of years where he averaged around 30 with a strike rate of 190.
Oh yeah, so I'm probably being a little biased, and I can own up to that.
Yeah,
because of
no. I mean, if you look at his record overall, it's really patchy. I mean, he's had years in the IPL where he's made negative runs, right? Yeah. Like there's always been. Maxwell is a different kind of dude, right? Like, and we talked about Kevin Peterson last week and about the Cal Roll thing and everything as well. Not everyone is cookie cutter, and those kinds of players quite often go off in that area. And they're also, sometimes they're treated badly, sometimes they're treated too well, and so they do become different kinds of guys. But anyway, my point is, in general, when you see the same two players going back and forth in public over and over again, like as Ian Chappell and Ian Botham showed us over years, it's up to you whether you want to give a shit about it. Do you know what I mean? I'm just not going to give a shit about these two, because I think Maxi had a go at him in his book and Viru's had a go at him publicly before. I just kind of have to move on and forget about that. Kaushal said, what's up with Jaiswal leaving Mumbai? How true are the rumors him leaving Rajasthan? Ooh, what have you got for us?
I'm going to take the sickness card and say, I don't know what you're talking about, Kaushal. I genuinely don't know. The rumors that he's leaving RR, that's the first that I'm hearing of, to be honest.
I haven't heard
with
that.
With Jaiswal leaving Mumbai, I think there are two sides of the story, and I would love everyone to, ideally, it'd be nice if you heard both sides of the stories, perhaps if it ever comes out. But if it does, then I think you'll get to make up your own mind based on hearing both sides.
You heard it here first. Robbie Utapas says that there is a huge rift between... Pratik says, a big fan of your debut knock of 86 against England. I must be talking to you. Yeah. How do you speak Malayalam so well?
Malayalam.
Malayalam is Malay. Say it again.
Malayalam.
Okay. So my wife speaks... Oh, no, well, sorry. My wife's family speaks Malay in Sri Lanka. It's a completely different language. This is the language from Kerala, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Srisant speaks this.
He does, yeah. So, Pratik, my mum's a Malayali. My mum's from Kozhikode. Okay. So that's how I learned the language. In fact, an interesting story is that when I first went to Kerala, when I was really young, I didn't know how to speak Malayalam. And then I would speak to my grandmother in English. And so my grandmom said, the next time he comes here, he better know Malayalam. So I started speaking. And then my mum told me that. So I started speaking Malayalam to my driver, who was a Malayalam. So he would take us to school and drop us back from school. So I would speak to him and I'd learn and watch a lot of Malayalam movies. And I kind of picked the language up a little bit. And then that's how I learned to speak Malayalam.
And now you just watch the Srisant movies when he stars in their...
Very few Srisant movies.
I remember at the Olympics, I can't remember who told me this, but someone who worked on the Olympics said that when, for the Indians, they brought in all the Hindi translators, right? Not knowing that so many of the athletes are from Kerala and that they didn't have adequate translation for that. So there's a fun, that's the only two things I know is Kerala, well, three things, Kerala, Srisant's movies, and that the Olympics got embarrassed by bringing the wrong translators. Siddharth says, still waiting for your Vijay Mallya stories. Look, I've got a couple. Robbie's going to have about 25. It's going to have to be an entire episode one day. And even then, we're going to have to be so careful with what we say. But we'll see what we can do.
Kimo, it's not worth the risk.
Robbie, which analyst did you consult during your playing days? Yeah, did you have any relationships with analysts?
Not too many, to be honest. I think that that door's being opened right now, if I may say so. And I think the fact that so much of analysis happens by in general, and I think it is a tool that a lot of cricketers must use, especially during the off season, as far as goal setting is concerned, as far as you know, showing them and being honest to them and showing them what reality and the truth is. I think they need to start doing it. I would often go to ESPN Cricket Info and just look at the numbers myself. What have my numbers been like in general? What do I want the numbers to be? And then kind of break that whole thing down.
When you weren't reading my articles, of course. Yeah. I would say when I worked with older players, I would basically say, look, you've already got to where you are in your career without analysis. This is what I can offer. If you think it's handy, you come to me. But it was, I mostly worked with the younger players who were used to it. not that it couldn't help the older players, but I didn't want to get in their heads if it wasn't something that they needed. Like, what, you know, with someone like David Warner, like how much time am I going to spend telling David Warner to do various things, right? Like if he wants to come to me, he can come to me. He knows me and it's fine. Who do you rate more, Padikkal or Smaran?
Talapadi, good question, da.
We got another good one, actually.
Smaran has been, you know, incredible for Karnataka this past season, and I was wondering why CSK didn't pick Smaran because he's a middle order bat and gun. He would be so good along with say the likes of a Shivam Dubey, but SRH have gone and picked him up as a replacement player, so he goes there.
Yeah, a couple of replacement players. We've had Daryl Brevis as well, but we can talk about that if he plays later. Shera says, is Dig Vash the India's third best spinner? I love him, but remember, it's really early in his career, but I'm a massive fan. He's found a length that is really hard to smash, and his variation is really, really interesting as well. He's a good controller. He looks like he's got a smart head on him, but let's not get... I don't think he's the third best Indian spinner at the moment.
Sharath, I would say that, you know, with bowlers, even say someone like, someone like, for example, Varun Chakravarti, for that matter, was found out in his second season. So you have to allow players to go through that period of, you know, being through the fire, to be honest, where they work for one season and they absolutely don't work. And then they have to go and work on their game and then come back and then show the world why they're as good as they are or they were in the first season. Because there's the intent to work and improve yourself and evolve your skills as you play as well. I've had to, like I'd say, anyone who's played at the IPL, we've had to reinvent ourselves because every season there would be a new plan up against you. Right? Or there would be a new matchup again. How do you navigate through that? You know, so I would say he'd have to, like, give him some time. Give him a year or so in the IPL and then we'll figure out exactly worth his salt or not.
Yeah, you can, it's really important. Someone said this to me the other day, uncapped players are doing really well. We should pick more uncapped players. They're forgetting all the uncapped players who don't do well. But also, it's very hard to game plan against someone that you haven't got a lot of information on or you haven't seen all that much. And so sometimes you get a little bit of a boost at the start, but your career really starts in year two and year three when teams are like, okay, we need to take this guy down now.
Yeah.
And things change quite a bit. Keshav says, I became your fan in that sixth ODI of 2007 when you scooped broad, finishing the game in the final over. That was my introduction to 360 degree shot making. Was that premeditated? I hope it was.
It was premeditated because he had long on and long off back and he had fine leg up. And that shot I hadn't played through the entire innings up until that point. And I'd practiced a lot of that shot. Till that point, I'd practiced two shots, when the walking down the wicket and, you know, the what they call the walking assassin shot. And then the other one is the paddle was the two shots. The walking paddle that I played were the two shots I practiced, and I felt like, okay, I've gotten this, right? I'm gonna execute this in the match. I didn't play that shot, the paddle, because it didn't feel right. And I'd seen long off back, I'd seen long on back and shot fine up, shot third up. And then he had, you know, Collingwood had a pretty different feel compared to, you know, how we played cricket back then. Right. So I felt this is the ideal time to play this shot. So I walked out hoping that he would bowl a full toss and he actually did. And then I just got it on just below the sticker, to be honest, but went all the way. And then that just killed England in that game. I think they felt undusted. And then so immediately next ball he had fine leg go back. Monty was in fine leg, so he went back. And then Alistair Cook came to mid off And then I knew again, he's going to go, you know, Yorker. So I was like, okay, if I can try and convert this into a full toss and hit it along the ground for four, past mid on or mid off, somewhere in the line of being in the V, if I can get that, I'll should be able to seal this game. So tried that again, and then just worked again.
So just on that, it's worth remembering that shot was what ruined Broad forever, and that's why he got smashed by Yu Faraj a couple of weeks later. That's how I remember the story. Anyway, Andy says, have Guycott, Conway and Dubé been the deodorant covering up CSK's poor batting recruitment for the last 3 years? Well, that's an interesting question, actually. I could see it. I mean, I think Conway had such a great year. Dubé became like one of the most feared players, and Guycott's been ridiculous. As we were saying last week, you can have three good batters and it can overcome a lot of other issues. I mean, you know, within a batting lineup. Do you think they've been good at recruiting?
Well, see, I'll tell you what. I've recruited for them in one season, the 2022 season, for the 23 season.
Oh, they were good that year.
Yeah, we went and recruited a fair few players, both Indian and foreign players. And Sheikh Rashid came into the side at that point. And we were insistent on Sheikh Rashid. And oftentimes, as it goes, sometimes the people who don't necessarily watch the cricket live don't necessarily have a full understanding of what the capability of a batter is. Because even when we do conduct cricket matches, selection cricket matches for for franchises, the view that they get is the view of just bowler and batter, the straight up view, right?
Yep.
22 yards. They don't get the entire ground, what field is set, what has happened. So the minor nuances of the game have just gone amiss, right? And oftentimes they pick players that play good shots in those viewings, rather than who played the field and absorbed pressure. And there have been times where, like, for the life of me, like, and last year I wasn't invited to go and help them out, so I didn't. And year before last, they invited me, but I had some restrictions as an NRI, so I couldn't make it. I would have loved to go because, you know, there are fair few great Indian batters, domestic Indian batters. And the ones coming up through the ranks now, Kimbo, are super talented, dude. Have you seen that Ayush Mathur? That kid is...
Yeah.
Something else, eh? And anyway, isn't forget his batting. Do you see him field yesterday? That was gone.
Yeah. Yeah, that stop on the boundary, but it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
A 17-year-old playing his first game at Mumbai against Mumbai Indians at Mumbai. Oof, that is stuff of like, that means you can keep your cool under pressure. That tells you a lot about a player. And oftentimes I think that a lot of the work that is done by scouts are discounted by the people making the final decision.
I think you've done this and I've done this before. There's a big disconnect at the moment because there aren't proper decision makers at most franchises in the world and most international teams in the world, that you end up with this thing where like the coach has this idea on these players, but they haven't actually seen it. Whereas you've done all the work to see this player and they just don't understand. So you end up in this situation where there's a disconnect between the two levels. It's one reason why I would love to go back and work for a team, but I'd like to do it in a proper environment rather than the one I did it in, because it's like, this person wants this player, this person wants this player. And it's like, yeah, but guys, you asked me to find the player on the market that was like this. I spent a week looking at footage, going to grounds, talking to people, and then just say, oh, you don't like him. And you haven't seen him, right? Like, so it's really, really tough, that sort of stuff. Next question, you might want to, it's up to you, but thoughts on CAB asking BCCI to ban Harsha and Simon from commentary at KKR home games because they called out the curator on CricBuzz for not giving the home team what they want.
Go and make your own stadium and all of this will end. If that is possible, franchises should just invest on creating their own stadium. It'll cost a couple of hundred crores. They can do it in any part of the city and it'll be their own and they can control everything from tickets to all of it. So this whole hierarchy of banning, like broadcasters, so what? We're not allowed to have our own opinion. We just have to be flock and just kind of follow suit and listen. Like, I know why I don't, like why I'm broadcasting in the studios and not in the, you know, in... at the grounds, because you need to follow a narrative, and if you have an opinion, you will be pulled up, and I think it's unfair to Harsha and Simon, to be very honest, and I genuinely believe that like franchises should have a little bit more control over their home environment and what they get at home.
Mm.
you know, I think that needs to be, basically, they need to basically have their own stadium. I've gone to the US and I just went earlier on to, you know, to a franchise game in of NFL earlier this year. And boy, was it like they had their own stadium. People came in, they controlled everything. There were great seats for everyone. They were really taken care of and fans were really taken care of. And so, and then it becomes a connection between the franchise and the fans here.
Yeah.
Really connection between the franchise and the fans here.
I went to an NBA game. I went to see the Celtics play Nuggets. And like, it's little things. Like you get a food box and the food box is branded with Boston Celtics on it. Right. And I was like, what cricket ground in the world has ever done anything so simple like that? But of course they do that because everything in the stadium is for the franchise. Right. And also going forward for these teams, IPL teams are going to be worth a lot, but it's also worth quite a lot, especially for the smaller market teams, right? It's worth quite a lot to have music concerts there, right? To have, you know, ceremonies there, to have all these different, you know, maybe and another sport comes and plays. Like they have a baseball game there or an NFL game or a football game or whatever it may be. Like there are other things that you can do with the stadium. So I'm with you. I think it's a big problem with cricket that like the franchises own most of cricket, but they don't actually own the things that are the most important. And so you pay a lot of money to go to an IPL game. And like
Have they been banned, by the way? Or they're just asking
BCCI? I wouldn't have thought they would have been bad. I would have thought that it's just been a question at the moment, would be my guess.
That wouldn't be a good look on BCCI if they actually go through with it.
Well, it's happened to Harsha before, hasn't it? It wouldn't be the first time it's happened to Harsha. You would know more than me. What's happened with Irfan Pathan? Like people do, this is a thing at the moment.
Well,
staying
I think
on the right side of people matters.
Irfan, ideally, Irfan should be the one saying his story, not anybody else. But it's about narratives and having opinions of your own.
Well, and it's worth saying too, in when stuff like this happens, everyone goes, "Oh, India." Michael Holden and Tony Kozier were taken off West Indian broadcasts 10, 15, 20 years ago now, right? Yeah. For similar reasons. This is a thing that we've seen a lot. And people often say to me, why have you never commentated on TV? It's because they would never put a TV microphone in my hand because I will say what I say. Not that I'm dangerous or anything, just that I might not say what they wanted. All right, two last quick ones because Robbie is going to fall asleep. Robbie, you played under multiple captains and with other players in the IPL. Who is the one you learnt the most from or had the biggest impact on your career, if any? Glenn Maxwell.
Learn a thing or two about partying from him. I'd say Rahul Dravid, Anil Kumble, MS Dhoni, Gautam Gambhir. This is from experience. These four.
I want to take that back. If you were 20, knowing everything you know, and you're 20 and you're starting your career now, which one of those guys or someone else would you pick as your mentor?
MS.
Interesting.
MS.
All right. Last question. Robbie, do you remember hitting Brett Lee for six in the 2007 CB series with basically a tennis smash? That shot lives rent-free in my mind.
I should charge you rent then, Comster.
No, bro. He would like the money from that shot. Do you remember it?
Yeah, I remember it. We were at Sydney and I knew he was going for my head. He was upset. He was angry with me. Binger was upset with me, right? And so he went bounce a first ball, bounce a second ball. It was a big no ball. And then I knew he was going to go bounce it again. You know, even if he got warned, he was going to go bounce it again. So I, like, as I started walking out, I'm like, okay, this is bouncer. Cause he's like, I walked out a little early. So then I realized, okay, I've walked out a little early. So now and I know he's going to go bouncer. So back away and just be ready. So I backed away and said, watch the ball. So I backed away, watched the ball and then just reacted to it. I got lucky with that.
Perfect. All right. We're going to finish up there. Thank you to everyone for your super chats and everyone who was commenting. Especially go over and subscribe to both of our channels, to Robbie's channels, to my channels, and everywhere else. But thank you all for your support. And let us hope that next week, Robbie is fully healthy and fit and not wearing the world's thickest coat.
Yeah, I swear. I don't want to be wearing this, but if I take this off, it feels really cold.
I love that I'm in London and I'm cold and you're actually colder than me in Dubai at the moment. Yeah. Anyway, guys, we will see you again very soon. Oh, what was that?
I said, if I touch my face, I'm like hot. It's weird.
Oh, mate, to me, you're always hot.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, So support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.